Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk coming back at you tonight. It's been a while since we've been on, but you know, summertime is kind of hard to come on a lot because you normally got a lot of stuff going on as far as traveling and all that good stuff. Even though this summer has definitely been unusual due to COVID, and you really can't get out and about, but you try to do little stuff here and there with your family. So we're gonna try to get better with the consistency of the show. But we appreciate you listening and supporting your boys. What up, Keys, man? It's been a while, bro.
Yo, what's going on? Glad to be in here. I won't even say glad to be back, I'll just say glad to be in here. But yeah, it's been a minute. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. So, let's just start with last weekend, man. Let's talk about it. Kobe Covington versus Tyron Woodley, a fight that's probably 2 years overdue, in my opinion. I thought it should have been a fight that happened when Kobe won the fake interim title. And then, they tried to schedule him versus Woodley and, a lot of stuff didn't happen. So we finally got the fight last weekend. And for those that know, Kobe Covington won via TKO due to, Woodley may have broke his ribs or something. But, you can hear him screaming in the octagon. But, Kobe picked up the victory. After the fight, he called out Jorge Masvidal and Kamaru Usman. So what were your thoughts on the fight, Keys?
So the fight went exactly how I predicted that it would go. We didn't get on for a show, so y'all didn't hear my prediction, but I did predict it to my friends and to myself. I
and
knew
Twitter.
That. I predicted that on Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
yeah,
I think
so
me and
Twitter,
you had, and when the fight was announced, me and you said that the fight was going to go the way it went. We both said it.
Yeah.
Because we just didn't have.
Right after.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because right after he lost to Gilbert Burns, they immediately were in talks for the Covington Woodley fight. It was right after that, and which I didn't really understand. It was the following week after he got absolutely dominated by Gilbert Burns, he was in talks to fight debatably an even tougher opponent, which I don't understand what was the logic in that. But and I immediately was disgusted. I was that's such a bad fight for him right now. The guy just lost 10 rounds in a row. He just lost 10 straight rounds, and now you're going to have him fight debatably an even tougher opponent than he just fought. I don't understand. If I'm his team, I would be going for a guy that's a bit lower down in the top 15. Take a ranked guy, but you don't need to take a top three guy. Never mind a top five. I don't know. I didn't like the fight from the jump, and I just knew that he would lose. I knew there was no way that he was beating Kobe Covington. I knew he had no chance to win that fight. A lot of people disagreed, but I think they were just not looking at it on for what it was, and it's just, I wasn't even upset to see it. I really wasn't even upset because I knew that was how it was going to go, so I was already prepared.
I think for me, watching the fight, I just didn't want him to get finished. I didn't want him to get KO'd, submitted, but nothing like that. And of course, he ended up, what they call it, a TKO? Was it a TKO?
Yeah,
or
they
a,
said,
I don't know.
Yeah, they said it was a TKO. He broke his rib.
Yeah, so I just didn't want him to get knocked out or submitted. I didn't think he would win the fight, but I thought he would be a little bit more competitive due to, all the animosity and all the back and forth. But Woodley just hasn't been the same guy to me, man. I know me and you went back and forth on this. He hasn't been the same guy to me since he won the belt. I love the Tyron Woodley that was fighting to get the belt. But the guy that won the belt and the guy that's been fighting since, he just don't even look like the same guy to me, man. So, you know, it's kind of crazy that he's on such a bad fall now. It's like, it seems like he hasn't won a fight in forever, but it's only been Usman, Burns, and Kobe. But it seemed like he on like a 5 or 6 fight losing streak to me. And he's just too good of a talent to be stuck in such a funk. But when you watch him fight, he's so scared to let his hands go. It's like, bro, that's what got you here. You're wrestling and letting your hands go. And then, like, when he did let his hands go one time against Kobe, and he got taken down, it was like he just stopped letting his hands go because he was scared of the takedown. You're a wrestler, bro. You should be know how to get back to your feet. And I just don't see the confidence in him, man. It's just like, I don't know what happened to his confidence, bro.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because it seems like it's a mental, like, watching him fight, it seems like something has happened to him mentally where he's not in the fight. Like, of course, like, you control your body, like, and physically he didn't perform, but I feel like it's also, I feel like it's a big mental aspect. You know, he, you know, I think at this point, when he fought Usman, like, the way, I think he was so shocked by the way that Usman controlled the fight, the entire fight, and the way that he was pretty much dominated. I think that was traumatic to him. And it kind of sounds funny, you know, that could sound like that I'm joking, but I'm really not. I think that could have been a traumatic experience, and he feels, it's almost like when Francis Ngannou, the way Francis Ngannou looked after he had fought Stipe and he got dominated so badly, the way he was dominated so badly, it was like after he fought him, he didn't look right for a while. Like, we didn't know if he was ever going to be the same. Then he fought Derek Lewis, and we were like, who is this guy? He wasn't even doing anything in the fight. He looked like a fish out of water, you know, in a primarily stand-up fight where you would think, oh, this is a great fight for him. It was kind of like that. I mean, but only this is kind of going on much longer, because Ngannou, we know, came back after that fight. He had that one fight where he didn't really look right, and then he took another fight, and I'm pretty sure he was back to himself, and he won by knockout the fight after that. But the Usman fight for Woodley was a similar experience to the Stipe fight for Ngannou, where I think he got beaten so bad that it stripped him of his confidence, and it's the mental aspect now that he is lacking in a major way, and that is cursing him in all of his fights.
But that's a good comparison, because Ngannou did have that stinker against Lewis, but now it seems like after the Lewis fight and they caught so much, whew, man, that was like one of the most hyped fights, and that turned out to be like one of the all-time great bedtime stories of a fight. It was like,
it was like,
man, I just remember the hype building up to that fight, man. We was like, man, they going to go at it. Somebody going to get knocked out. It was so far from that. But Ngannou rediscovered his confidence. Woodley hasn't. And that's weird to say, because he was a former champion. It's like you carry around a champion pedigree, and because it was at the time, it was like, remember the rumors was like he should fight George St. Pierre to figure out who's the best. What, he a welterweight? Welterweight?
Yeah,
he a welterweight.
Yeah, he's
it
a
was
welterweight.
Like to see determine who's the greatest welterweight champion of all time and all this, to where we at now, man. All right. We ain't going to keep beating up Woodley, man. You know, hopefully he can get his career back on track. But what does the win mean for Kobe? And what does the loss mean for Woodley?
Wait, you said what does the win mean for Kobe and what does the loss mean for Woodley?
Yeah.
So the win for Kobe, I think, is I mean, the way that, like, Woodley has been the way he's been beaten as of lately, I don't think that's like in terms of like a what in terms of his next fight. I don't think that win propels Kobe into a title rematch because of the way that Woodley's was just beaten by Gilbert Burns, and then Gilbert Burns is already fighting for the title anyway, so spot is already taken. Even if it were like a prime Woodley that he beat, you know what I mean? I just don't think that win right now is worth as much, being that he really has not been himself in like over a year. Woodley hasn't looked good in a fight to me since Darren Till. That was the last time that I think he looked good in a fight, and that was going on 2 years ago, because that was in I want to say the fall of 2018 when he fought Darren Till, and we are going into the fall of 2020. So to me, Woodley hasn't looked good since that fight, which is going on 2 years ago. So Covington, I think. What'd you say?
I say, wasn't that his last win?
Yeah, that was his last win.
Okay, all right.
So what I'm saying is, I think Covington, for a win for him there, I feel like really the only fight, well, I feel like there's two possible fights for Covington. I think a win there, you either got to put him against Masvidal, you either got to put him against Jorge Masvidal. I feel like that's probably like the fight, or you put him against Leon Edwards. Masvidal or Leon Edwards are pretty much the two fights for Covington at this point. Either which way that you match up those three guys, I feel like makes sense. Even if they do Masvidal versus Edwards, and then Covington just, who knows what he does. But if you, any which way I think you match up those three guys, I think is justified and it makes sense. You know, if you do Edwards versus Covington, or Covington versus Masvidal, or Edwards versus Masvidal, like any one of those makes perfect sense to me. So I think that's where you put him. And then any one of those three guys could win, you know, one of those. If Covington were to beat, you know, one of those two guys, I feel like then you have him rematch Usman or Gilbert Burns. You know, if Burns, however that fight goes, you have him fight the winner of that. And then a loss for Woodley, you know, in that fight, that right there, Woodley has now lost 15 rounds straight. He has lost 15 rounds in a row when you really think about it, because he had 3 5-round fights. You know, he had 2 Fight Night main events, and he had a title fight, a title defense versus Usman. So he lost 3 5-round fights, so 15 rounds straight. They all went to decision. I think one of the only good things you can really say that comes out of that is that he at least didn't get finished in any of those 3 fights, but even while saying that, that really doesn't really make it good, because he still got dominated and he lost 15 rounds straight. So a loss there, I mean, third loss in a row, and really hasn't really shown that he's, you know, coming back around at all, you know, mentally or physically or strategically. I don't know. I really don't know. I think you know, if I'm him, I would probably take some time off and maybe you know, work with some different coaches. Maybe, you know, change up your routine a little bit. You know, change up the team. Not saying to get rid of his team, but just to try to, you know, jump around a little bit and just try to get the vibes.
Yeah, re-energize yourself. Re-energize yourself. I get you.
and try to jump around a little bit and see, you know, what other avenues, not fighting. But I mean, one, yeah, he should think about if he even wants to be in there fighting. So I think that is one thing that he should take the time for. So take the time off to think about what you really want to do, if you really even want to fight anymore. So I think that is a big part of the mental aspect. If he's in there not actually wanting to be in there, then I feel like that could have a big impact on his performances and why he's looked that way. So that's the thing to decide, you know, and take time on. Another thing is to look at your team and think about maybe jumping around, you know, fighting at different gyms or with different coaches and just overall a different company around you, and see how that might change, you know, the whole vibe and the flow, you know, of his training. And then when he's ready to fight again, you know, maybe take like, you know, 6 months to a year off, and see, or even 6 months is even fair, I think, maybe a little bit longer, but, and then see, you know, start looking at an opponent. But I think he should take a lower level guy. I don't think he should take a top five guy. I don't think Woodley is a top five guy right now. I'm not even sure he's a top 10 guy right now. You know what I mean? I'm not even sure he's a top 15 guy right now, because I need to see some kind of motivation in him, because a lot of the top 15 guys, especially at welterweight, there's a lot of really good guys there. And, you know, even the lower half of the top 15 is still, there's a lot of good guys there. And it's to me, it's one of the best divisions. So for me to say, I'm not sure if he's even a top 15, I don't think, you know, so a lot of people would, they probably say, how could you say that? But at the same time, if you look at the division, I feel like it's valid to say, because if he's a guy who, you know, doesn't even look like Woodley doesn't even really look like he knows where he is in the octagon right now. He looks confused a lot of the time. So when you put a guy like that, I'm not even sure he's a top 15. But regardless, fight a lower level top 15 guy. You know what I mean? I wouldn't mind seeing Woodley versus, I wouldn't mind seeing him versus RDA. That's a fight that I've wanted to see for a while. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing him versus RDA. I wouldn't mind seeing him versus Ponzinibbio. But even then, though, but I even have issues with that. But regardless of who it is, that's what I think. Take time off, figure out what you want to do, get around some different people, change up the routine, you know, decide if you want to fight. And then once you're ready, you know, take a lower-ranked guy and try to get your confidence back. That's what I think should be next for Woodley.
I think I'm about to knock your socks off, man, on what I'm about to say. I think Woodley needs to go to Daniel Cormier and have Daniel Cormier see whether or not Daniel Cormier is willing to be his trainer, be his coach. I think Cormier could infuse some energy into Woodley. He could bring back Woodley's fighting spirit, because both of them were college, top ranked college guys. And I think it'll get Daniel Cormier, even though he's retired, it'll get him a sense of he's still in the fight. And I think being a coach or a trainer would definitely be something that would motivate him. And I think that would be a match made in heaven. He wouldn't take it easy on Woodley. He would tell Woodley, you know, what he need to hear, not what he want to hear. You know, a lot of people that coach MMA fighters and boxers, they tell them what they want to hear instead of what they need to hear. Just like with my man, Deontay Wilder. His coaches did him a disservice. Okay, you got a right hand. What about your left hand? You got to use that too. What about playing defending? So sometimes you need people to give you that tough love. And I think Woodley should reach out to Daniel Cormier and see whether or not Cormier is willing to train him. But I'm with you. I'm looking at the rankings in that division. Vicente Luque is ranked number 10. That just goes to tell you how stacked this division is. So Tyron Woodley dropped two spots to number 7. And then rounding out the top 10, you got Michael Chiesa, RDA, Neil Magny, Vicente Luque. And then after that, you got, man, Jeff Neal, Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis, and Robbie Lawler. So there are no easy fights for Woodley in this division. So I think he needs better coaching. He needs to rediscover his fighting spirit. It just seems like he doesn't have the spirit to fight no more when I watch him fight. But he's always backing up. He's scared to let his hands go. He doesn't use his wrestling. And like you said, he looked lost in there sometimes. And that's kind of weird to say from a former champ, but it's true. What with you on Colby Covington? I think a win, I would rather see him fight Leon Edwards, because I think Edwards is due for a top five fight. And I think if they bill it as a title eliminator, I think Colby Covington would be more willing to take that fight than, you know, I think he would take the Masvidal fight too. But I think it would be so much drama with that fight that Colby probably would pull some of his BS as far as the money ain't right, you know, I want this, I want that, try to make some outlandish demands to get out of the fight. But I think he would be more willing to take the Leon Edwards fight if it's, you know, built up to be a title eliminator. I thought Colby actually looked good against Woodley, man. He didn't have that same crazy pace that he normally has. He seemed more relaxed, more calm. And, you know, of course, he has his own new fighting team or whatever. So, yeah, man, I'm with you, man. If you could get Colby versus Masvidal, or Colby versus Leon Edwards, or Edwards versus Masvidal. But I think you have to, with whatever fight you do with those three guys, it has to be dubbed as a title eliminator. Because that way we'll know who getting the next title shot. So, especially with Burns fighting Usman next, it'll leave one guy out in the cold. But that's just the way it is sometimes in the fight business. I wasn't going to bring this up, but I just feel like I have to. Keith, I'm so disappointed in the UFC, bro. Colby Covington post-fight.
I thought you were going to say you were disappointed in me.
No. Man, I'm so disappointed in the UFC, bro. Man, wow. The UFC, Colby Covington's post-fight remarks, he should at least been fine to me, bro. I don't care what, if you fine him $2, you can't allow him to say the stuff that he said after that fight, man. He said Black Lives Matters is a sham. He called Tyron Woodley a Marxist and a communist. And then he said there should be more police brutality, bro. The UFC hasn't came out and said anything. They haven't said admonished him. They haven't came out and said we do not support the things Colby Covington said. They haven't said anything. Now, I know me and you have talked about.
He said all those things?
Yeah, bro. He said all that after the fight, dog.
I didn't know that he said any of that. I thought that when you said his post-fight remarks, I thought you were referring to referring to the LeBron James thing that he said. He said, like, LeBron James is a coward or something like that.
This was the media availability post-fight news conference that he said all this, man. And,
oh, wow. No, I don't like that.
Bro, yeah, it's just,
They should be coming out. They should be coming out and making a statement at least.
Exactly.
From the UFC.
You have to show some kind of support for your black fighters in this actual incident. Because, man, what he said, man, I ain't gonna lie. I had to rewind it. Because somebody put the clip on Twitter. and I listened to it like three times. I was like, hell no. So I know me and you have went back and forth. Oh, no, we have never went back and forth on this. We said trash talk is good for the fight game. It's one of the old things about the fight game that's basically you have to sell a fight. And how do you sell a fight? Through trash talk. Trash talk does sometimes go over the line, but this wasn't trash talk, bro. This was like on a whole different level. And it was like, you know, you hate to label somebody a racist, but man, the stuff he was saying, I was saying like the UFC has to do something. So I thought you had seen it, but you didn't see it. So this is your first time hearing about it. So I was gonna ask you what was your opinion on it, but being that you didn't see it, I guess I can't ask you that unless you willing to follow what I told you.
No, so I didn't see it because I don't know if that was like the post fight, like right after the fight. I mean, I knew the fight was over and I was over at a friend's house, and I mean I thought you meant his post fight interview. Either way, if it was after the fight, I wasn't watching any of the coverage after the fight. I mean, I wasn't really even like locked in on the fight because I knew Covington, like I already knew how it was, and I saw he was just going to dominate, and it really wasn't something for me to lock in on the TV about. You know what I mean? But like I was having a beer and I was enjoying myself, having a good time walking around mingling. I wasn't even really watching it, but just based off of what you said, I mean, I don't appreciate that he would say those things. I mean, it's because look, like on one hand, you know, the baseline of his gimmick, you know, the whole, the Trump, you know, friendly, you know, the Trump representation, the hats, all that, you know, that whole thing, you know, he called Brazil a dump, you know, like all those like baseline things, like that stuff, you know, I'm not outraged by those things like some other people are. I'm not outraged by those things because to a certain point, it's like, those things to me is that's what he wants to do, and you know, but these things that you're telling me he says, that is, you know, that's very hurtful to a lot of people. You know, so is calling Brazil a dump. I know that was a while ago. That's hurtful to a lot of people too, but that is different to me than, I don't think that's on the same level in my opinion as the remarks that you talk about here. You know, to say, you know, Black Lives Matter is a sham and there should be more police brutality. That's like really harsh. That's really harsh things to say. Calling a country a dump, you know what I mean, is not really like, people aren't, you know, dying over that remark. Like saying there should be more police brutality, like in that case, police are killing between 500 to 1,000 people this year. You know what I mean? Like, you look up the number. Police have killed a lot of people this year. And people are dying over that remark. And people are dying over, you know, in and around the Black Lives Matter movement because of, and, you know, within, you know, the events surrounding. So, you know, at this time to say those kinds of things, I feel like is hurtful to a lot more people. And, I definitely don't like that he would, utter – you know, that he would move his lips to say those things, and then furthermore that the UFC wouldn't even come out and respond to it in some type of way. You know, the fact that Dana White, you know, I love to support Dana White because I like him as a person. I like the way he moves, but it's things like this that really irk me about him. You know, I feel like he doesn't like rise to the occasion when he should, and that really irks me. You know what I mean? The things like that, it really irritates me. But it's not just him. The UFC as a whole, you know, there's many different people, you know, high up in the UFC that could be coming out and saying something, and they don't. And that, I really don't like that. I definitely do not like that.
Yeah, man. I know for me personally, I tweeted that out yesterday. that, you know, I was disappointed in the UFC and all that because they didn't come out and say anything about it. Because to me, if you silent, then you compliant. And if your organization has, you know, minority fighters in it, you should at least issue a statement. Because we know they're not going to find them. We know they're not going to find them. So you have to at least issue a statement. And, you know, Kobe's words, la, 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 you know, even if it's, because we know it's going to be table service. We know it's just going to be the standard statement. But, man, you have to say something, bro. You can't take a silent approach to that. And then the part that he said about LeBron, I really didn't see that part, but I heard about it because I think I saw a clip from Stephen A. Smith was talking about it or whatever. But, look, man, enough about that, you know. Let's talk about some good news, man. I'm gonna let you get very animated in this discussion. Tell me about Michael Chandler signing with the UFC.
Okay, so Michael Chandler. So I have a group chat with a couple of my friends, and I actually I won't lie, like, it's interesting to see the way that humans are amazing, you know what I mean? Like, and the way your body reacts to certain, and that kind of sounded a little weird the way I was starting that off. But what I'm saying is, I got the chills. Like when I saw that they signed him, I got the chills, man. I really did bad. Like I was bugging. I really had the chills bad, and I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, I clicked the article, and I was like, no way. And then I was like, because I was at work on break or something, and I saw that. I said, no way. And I clicked it, and I'm like, first of all, why isn't this, like, a bigger announcement? Like, it seemed like, I don't know, it was, like, not under the radar. Like, I didn't see anything about it on Twitter, and then I, like, found it, like, separately, and I was like, this was reported like 2 hours ago. Like, how come this isn't like, you know, major breaking news? You pretty much just signed like, you know, debatably the biggest like prospect in Bellator. I mean, if not like top three biggest prospects in Bellator. So how, I mean, like, to me, signing Michael Chandler is a bigger deal than signing Ben Askren was, because Ben Askren really wasn't. Michael Chandler has competed against, you know, UFC fighters, and he has competed against high level guys in Bellator. Ben Askren had competed in Bellator early on, but he mostly had most of his wins in one championship, and we don't really know how legit his resume was of those fights. But Michael Chandler, I feel like, I'm pretty sure Michael Chandler had fought, I think Michael Chandler has fought Eddie Alvarez before too. I think he had fought Eddie Alvarez in Bellator years ago, once or twice. I want to say they fought once or twice. I could be wrong, but I could be right. And my point being is just, I think Michael Chandler actually has been battle tested, as where Ben Askren had not been battle tested. And this to me is an exciting sign. But the only thing that I'm iffy about, even though I had the chills while I was reading the headline anyways, about him being the backup for the title fight, is the fact that he's the backup for the title fight. I was excited. All right, I had the chills reading that he was the backup for the title fight, but I think it was mostly because that he got signed in the first place. I was more shocked that he got signed and excited that he got signed, period, more than I was shocked and excited that he was a backup for the lightweight title fight. Because when I really dug deeper into it, I said, wait a second, how the hell does Michael Chandler sign the UFC, doesn't have any fights in the UFC, and is going to be the backup for the lightweight title fight? I was like, how is that even possible? No, not even how is it possible. How does that make any logical sense? It's like, it's amazing to me that Ferguson was supposed to fight Khabib, and he fell out for like the 900th time. Or no, they fell out for the 900th time. Well, Khabib fell out that time, but you know what I mean. The fight fell through again, and then he should have just waited, because if that was the case, Ferguson would be the backup right now. But he chose to fight, and then he got dominated by Gaethje, and now Gaethje's fighting Khabib, and you have Michael Chandler as the backup. And where's Ferguson? Ferguson is nowhere, because Ferguson is in La La Land, you know, trying to fight Poirier, and they won't pay Poirier enough, so now Ferguson doesn't even have a fight. And he's going to watch this guy come over from Bellator, who has zero fights, is going to possibly fight Khabib and get his fight that he wanted, or fight Gaethje, which is an easier fight for Michael Chandler, if you ask me. If Chandler were to come in and fight Gaethje, if Khabib falls out of the fight and Chandler fights Justin Gaethje, I fully believe that Chandler can beat Gaethje. And that's the craziest part about it, because if that were to happen, you would have a guy who came over from really think about this.
Yeah.
I think Michael Chandler can beat Gaethje. If you now really think about this, because we always say Bellator is not as good. They do not as good, but Michael Chandler is good though. He is pretty good. You got to admit, he is pretty good. He has a good stand up, and he can wrestle too, and I think he could beat Gaethje. I'm not saying he would, but I think he would have a big chance to win that fight, and because I think he brings more to the table than Gaethje does, and it would be so crazy. Think about how crazy it would be. A guy comes over from Bellator, and in his first fight, becomes the undisputed lightweight champion.
Would he be the undisputed?
Actually, yeah, that's a good question, because they didn't specify if it would go to an interim belt at that point.
Because I would say, let's go the other way. Let's say Gaethje happens to fall out, and he actually gets to fight Khabib for the belt. And yeah, you can go undisputed. And that would be crazy if he was to walk to the ring with his Bellator belt. That'd be crazy.
Yeah. That would be.
But if he was to fight, if he was to fight Khabib, of course it would be undisputed. But I think if he was to fight Gaethje, I don't think it would be undisputed. It'd probably be interim. But I'm with you, man. I was kind of shocked that it didn't get a lot of fanfare or news coverage that he signed with the UFC. And then to immediately put him in the backup role, I was shocked by that too. But at the same time, you have to respect the man's decision. You know, everybody know that the UFC is the major leagues for mixed martial arts. Bellator has looked at the minor leagues. Bellator and ONE are looked at as the minor leagues. So for him to come to the UFC to take his chances and fight against the best in the world, you know, I'm excited for that. Now, we know that guys that come from Bellator haven't fared well in the UFC here in recent years. Some of them went running back to the Bellator or running to other promotions. But I guess I looked it up. Your boy Chandler, he has a win against Alvarez and a loss against Alvarez. So, but I think that's a good sign for the UFC. And I think it's a bad look for Bellator, because there's no way you should let that guy walk. You probably should give him whatever he asks for. Being that he's one of the staples in your company, one of the guys that helped build your company, and you let him walk, I think that's a bad look. But at the same time, this might have been the time in his career where he wanted to go and do something else. I think if the UFC could possibly get Douglas Lima, then they would probably have the two best fighters in Bellator. Being that Ryan Bader recently lost his light heavyweight belt. Then they got that female down there too, Douglas Lima's sister. So But I like the signing for the UFC. I don't like that they put him in the backup role. I think we'll probably get Chandler versus Ferguson if he don't have to fight and as a backup. I think that'll be the fight we get. And you'll probably get the loser of Khabib versus Gaethje Poirier unless Khabib loses. So they'll probably get him an automatic rematch. So unless they get Gaethje Connor, because Dana did tease that probably 2021 Connor be returning to the octagon. I don't know how true that is, but he did tease that on ESPN. So, but I'm happy for the UFC signing Michael Chandler. I'm happy for Chandler.
Wait. What was that on? What did you say? Who teased what on ESPN?
Dana White teased that Connor will be turning to the octagon in 2021. So, So I think if that's true,
he was supposed to have a season in 2020. What happened to the season?
Man.
What happened to the season? So. I don't want it. You know what, man? Listen. Yeah, I believe it when I see it. I still waiting for the season, and it never happened. We got a 2 second fight with Cowboy that nobody even remembers because it was so short and it was so underwhelming. And we all said the fight was over, and we all said that's it. That's it. Oh my goodness. You know, the Pettis fight that night should have been the main event. That fight was at least you got at least a whole round out of it. But, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. So I'm still waiting on my season. I'm still waiting on the season. There was supposed to be four fights in 2020, and we got instead of four fights, we got 40 seconds. So I don't even know if you count that as one fight. So I don't know about all that. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm like less than half listening at this point with that. So,
yeah, I think Dana was just doing that because he was on ESPN, and you know how Conor fans get roused up at even a hint there's a possibility that he's going to come back. So, you know, maybe he knows something we don't know. Maybe they've been talking behind the scenes, but yeah, that was the thing that came out. So I'm probably thinking, yeah, I think Chandler's first fight is probably going to be against Ferguson, man. Especially with Poirier. Man, this money thing is becoming an issue, man. This money thing is becoming a major issue, bro. Fighters not taking big fights because of money is becoming a really big issue. We're not going to kick a dead horse because we talked about that before. So, Saturday is UFC 253. My man Keys has been waiting on this fight for a long time. Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa, a.k.a. my man Keys called him Juice Man. Keys, I'm going to give you the floor on this. Start us off with our preview of UFC 253, Adesanya versus Costa.
So we going to predict, are you going preview of the fight or the card?
No, just the fight. We're just going to talk about the fight.
Okay, so yeah, that's good because, like, the card itself, I don't even know really who's on the card. I know, like, my boy Kai Kara.
There's only two good fights
flyweight
on the card.
No, maybe. But, hey, there might be three good fights on the card because there's a flyweight bout, which is the third fight down, and it has my boy. I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but it looks like Kai Kara France.
Oh, yeah. He good.
Yeah, man, he. I watched his fight last time. He put on a really fun fight when I watched him the last time, and so I'm excited for that one. I'm glad they put him the third fight.
Yeah, he's actually
down,
pretty
so.
Good. I'm sorry.
No, you're good because at first I didn't even realize when I read through the card, I kind of scanned it, and I didn't really notice. And then I had to double back on it this week, and then I was like, wait a second, that Cara France guy's on the card. He actually had a really good fight last time. He when I watched this fight the last time, I came on our show after that fight, and I said that was the best fight I'd seen in a while. I said that was the best fight I'd seen in probably a couple of years. I remember I said that on our show after I watched his fight that time. But yeah, so that's going to be good. I'm looking forward to his fight and then the two title fights. But yeah, you asked me specifically about Adesanya and Costa, so I'm going to talk about Adesanya and Costa. So Adesanya and Costa, the thing is this, right? So I've been thinking about this all week. And I'm still thinking about it. I'm still analyzing it. You know what I mean? I'm still interpreting it, right? And I'm taking angles on the fight. You know what I mean? I'm taking angles on the fight. I'm crouching down, and I'm looking at it, you know, through a protractor. You know, I'm setting the protractor to a 45 degree angle. I'm peeking through the scope. Yeah, some people might not even know what a protractor is, but. You know, hey, we used to have those. We had those in school. So I'm taking angles on the fight, right? So I'm taking the protractor to it, and I'm setting it to a 45 degree angle. I'm peeking through the hole, right, to try to get the angles on the fight. And you know what I mean? I'm standing on top of a triangle, so I'm standing at the top of the pyramid, and I'm looking down on the fight, so I can get that aerial view, you know, from the top angle. Because I got to try angles on the fight, you know what I mean? So I'm trying to do that, and what I'm realizing is the fight is, I want to say he's 19-0, and the other one is 13-0. So you pretty much have undefeated versus undefeated in a title fight. They said this is only, I think, the second time or maybe the third time in UFC history where a title fight took place that was two undefeated fighters. One of those other times, I want to say, is John Jones and Cormier won, is one of the other ones. And I think there's one more. There's one more that happened a while back. I can't remember what it was. But, it hasn't happened a lot. So two undefeated guys are going to go. It's going to be 19-0 versus 13-0. But it goes a lot deeper than that, because the way I look at it is this, is that as far as I know, Paulo Costa doesn't have many. I'm pretty sure his 13 MMA fights, he started fighting when he started MMA, as far as I know. I could be wrong on that. I definitely could be wrong on that. I really don't know much about the guy. But from what I think I know, I'm pretty sure his 13-0 is his fight record. That's his professional fight record. He doesn't have like a background like where Adesanya has, I want to say between like 70, anywhere from like 70 to 80 kickboxing fights, and I'm pretty sure he only lost like, I think he had like five losses out of that. So Adesanya has a lot of fights, and then add that to his 18 or 19-0 in MMA, he has, you know, just short of 100 fights, and versus Paulo Costa has 13 fights, you know, as far as I know. And I just think Adesanya's a lot more. He's been fighting a lot more. And I feel like he's also, this is one of those fights where it's in, you know, you have a skinnier guy versus a more muscular guy, and the casual fan, you know, looks at it and they say, oh, like the skinnier guy is going to get knocked out by the bigger guy, you know, just off of that fact. And but really the thing is that Adesanya is a much more tactical striker. He's going to be, you know, he's not going to be there. I feel like Paulo Costa is going to be swinging for the fences. And Adesanya's not going to be there. He's going to be bobbing and weaving. He's going to be disappearing. He's going to be fading in and out of the matrix. You know what I mean? And Paulo Costa is going to be lost. You know what I mean? I think he's going to be lost. He's going to be swinging through the wind. And then the next thing you know, he's going to be exhausted because he's going to try so hard in the first two rounds to finish Adesanya, and he's going to throw himself out. And he's going to barely even land any strikes. Adesanya is not even going to be there. He's going to be so tired. And then Adesanya is going to light him up. And I feel like from And it could even happen in the early round because Adesanya is, like, where he's such a big counter-striker. Like, we saw how he was countering Whitaker and when he fought for the title. And I feel like we could see flashes of that in this fight. The only difference there is that Costa is probably going to be even more on the offense than Whitaker was. And Whitaker was really on the offense. He was attacking more than he usually does. But I think we'll even see more of that from Costa. But I think that's only going to hurt him because he's going to – all that power that he has, all that muscle is only going to drain him more. Every time he throws and doesn't land, it's just going to drain him more. And he's going to throw and not land a lot. And he's going to get real tired. And hey, maybe he even stays in the fight. Maybe he even goes the distance. But he's not going to win. I'm telling you, he's not going to win. That's at least my opinion. I don't think he's going to win. Adesanya is going to put on a striking clinic in this fight. That is my prediction. Adesanya, I think the most likely scenario is Adesanya will win a unanimous decision and it won't even be a close decision. But like I could see it being like a 50-46 is on there and what have you, maybe two 50-47s and a 50-46 if it goes to unanimous decision. But I actually want to see Adesanya win by like TKO in like the third or fourth round. Just like take him through the depths. You know what I mean? Drag him through the trenches and really bring him down the stretch and take him out there. So, I mean, I think it'll be a unanimous decision for Adesanya, but what would I like to see is a TKO in the third or fourth round.
I think the longer the fight goes on, the worse it gets for Paulo Costa. I think his best bet is to go in there and try to finish the fight in the first three rounds. I think anything after the third round is going to end badly for him. I think Adesanya definitely is probably the more technical striker, but Costa definitely has the power advantage. The thing that I know you just said that he's going to be swinging and missing a lot, but let's just say he connects one time. Does that gain Adesanya's respect, and how does it change Adesanya's game plan? Because we all know Paulo Costa does have that one-punch KO power. If he tags Izzy, how does Izzy react? Does Izzy change his game plan? Does Izzy become a kickboxer? I think that's the thing that we definitely have to be looking for in the fight is how does Izzy react when he gets hit by Paulo Costa. I think another thing that we haven't seen, but I don't think we're going to see it Saturday, is we haven't seen Israel fight off his back. We haven't seen too many people try to take him down. Plus, he's a skinny guy in that weight class, so I don't know how he would carry some of the bigger guys' weight with him being on his back. So, but I don't think we're going to see that in this fight. I think Paulo Costa would rather have a fight standing up. And just so you know, I looked it up, Paulo Costa does have 13 fights, but five of them are in the UFC. So he fought in like some other little organizations prior to coming to the UFC, but he got five fights in the UFC. I think this fight, I really don't think it's going to be action-packed, man. I think you're going to see Paulo Costa come out there swinging for the fences. And you're going to see Izzy probably backing up, counterpunching, kicking, you know, using his jab, using his length against Paulo Costa. I think this fight isn't going to be as bad as the Yoel Romero fight, but I think it's going to be Izzy trying not to take damage and being a technical fighter in there, not trying to go for a knockout, probably doing what you said, taking it to the judges' scorecard, and probably winning, I would get, just because it's a title fight, you think the challenger should be able to win one round. So I would give Paulo Costa one round. But I think he in over his head in this fight. Now, would I be shocked if Costa knocks him out? No, because Costa has that one, that power. But I don't think Izzy going to put himself in dangerous positions. And I see him fighting a very technical fight, probably a John Jones style of fight where he's going to keep the distance, try not to take punishment, and engage when it's advantageous to him. And we're going to see somebody's old got to go on Saturday. But if,
someone's old and got to go.
For the people that's listening, it's not like we're disrespecting Paulo Costa. We're just saying that when you give those two guys the eye test, Izzy has more ways of winning the fight, whereas Paulo Costa has one way of winning the fight. And that one way is with him and his hands, whereas Izzy can kickbox you, he can technical strike you, you know, he can do a lot of other stuff inside the octagon. So we're not selling Costa short. We're just saying he has one way of winning, and Izzy has more than one way of winning the fight. We'll give our prediction before we get off the air. But we had a light heavyweight championship fight Saturday as a co-main event. We got Dominique the Big Talker Reyes versus Jan Blachowicz. How do you see this one going, Keys?
Now, this fight, I feel like is going to be – I feel like this fight is a lot more unpredictable than the main event is, and I think this is going to be one of those ones. So I feel like this is going to be similar to what you usually see in the heavyweight fights. It's going to be two guys standing and banging, and you're just – you know, both are just kind of trying not to get hit with that one shot, because this fight will end in some type of TKO or knockout. You know, that's what I think. And it's going to be us just sitting there, you know, kind of on the edge of our seat, you know, just expecting that one shot to eventually land like you usually do in a heavyweight fight. I think that's what this fight is. That's going to be the nature of this fight. You know, these two guys are just both going to be going for the kill the entire time. I think this fight may even end up being, I'm not going to say it'll be fight of the night. I think it could be fight of the night, but I think one of these guys will at least get a performance bonus. I do think. Probably the winner of this fight will get a performance bonus, because I do think this will be a good one. As far as the prediction, I'm going with Blachowicz, and the reason is I'm not going to get technical about it, because it's not necessarily a technical reason. It's more of a probability and logic reason, and it's for me specifically when I'm saying, like, the last, I want to say, two or three fights that Blachowicz has had, I wouldn't say bet against him, because I didn't bet, but I picked against him, and he shut me up every single time, and in a big way. Like, when he fought Rockhold, when he fought, who'd he fight after that? He fought Corey Anderson, and he fought Rockhold, and there was somebody else that he fought, too, recently, and I forget, but it was like those couple of fights, he proved me wrong every time. I picked against him every time. I swore he would lose, and what did he do? He won big fashion with a knockout, and it shocked everybody. He does that, and I'm sure he's that guy in this one too. I'm sure if you will look up the odds right now, I wouldn't doubt it. He's the underdog. He's probably a big underdog. I wouldn't doubt he's like a plus 400 or something like that. Reyes is, you know what I mean? But he's probably like a plus 400, and everyone's counting him out. People are going to pick Reyes. And Reyes may very well win, but I just feel like I'm not gonna do it to myself, because I always go against Blachowicz, and he shuts me up big time, and he gets a knockout. So I'm going with Blachowicz. I think Blachowicz is going to win, and he's going to win by KO or TKO. I don't know when. But that's it. I don't know when it's going to happen, but that's when it's going to happen.
I'm picking Blachowicz to win also. And my reason is totally kind of crazy. It's because I'd have seen John Jones beat all these other guys. I'd have seen him beat Reyes. I've seen him beat Santos. The only guy he didn't fight was Blachowicz. So that's the only reason why I'm going Blachowicz, because he's the only one that hasn't lost to John Jones. And I think these other guys, if they was to win, the first thing people going to say is, well, he didn't beat John Jones. They can't say that about Blachowicz because he never fought him. So I know that's a crazy way of probably picking a fight. But I think if you have a guy that lost to Jones, then basically the fans, even though John isn't there, they're going to look at the champ like, you really not the champ, because the time you did fight the champ, you didn't win. So I would rather a guy that didn't fight and lose to John win the belt, so that people can give him the respect he deserves as a champ. I think this fight is definitely going to be an action-packed fight. And you're right, man. Every time we look at Blachowicz, man, and, you know, you look at who he's lined up against, because he fought Jacare before he fought Corey Anderson. And he beat Jacare, and it was like, wow, maybe this guy for real. But then when he beat Corey Anderson, I was really like, this guy's for real. But beating Lou Rockhold isn't nothing. But he did lose to Thiago Santos. So, and that was a fight he was dominating. That was a fight he was dominating. I know me and you talked about it. We was like, why did he go off the script for his game plan? He was winning the fight, doing everything.
Well, that's something to note, too. Blachowicz might actually be a sleeper. Blachowicz might actually be a sleeper in the division, because look how good he was doing versus Santos. The only reason that he lost was because I think his coaches must have told him to rush at him. They must have told him something, because he came out like a bat out of hell in whatever round that was, the second or third round.
He got caught, third
and
or fourth
he,
round.
He tried to rush
fourth,
in
yeah.
for no reason. He was not fighting like that the entire time. He was taking his shots, and he was landing, and he was definitely up on the scorecards. All of a sudden, comes shooting out of a cannon, rushes in at Santos. And I think he threw a shot. Yeah, he threw a shot, you know, a left hand or something, missed a shot. Santos countered it, knocked him out. I was like, man, what the hell was that? I was like, why did he just rush out like that all of a sudden? He was winning the fight. It made no sense. But that's what I'm trying to say. I think Blachowicz, we might actually have been sleeping on Blachowicz, Lee. I think we might have been sleeping on Blachowicz this entire time. He might be asleep.
Because when he lost to Santos, I know we came on. We was like, what the hell? Why did he do what he did? He was winning the fight. His game plan was working. When your game plan is working, you stick to it until your opponent makes you have to do something different. His opponent didn't make him do nothing different. So, I'm going with Blachowicz to win this fight, man. I'm going to say it's going to go the distance. And, you know, whoever wins is going to be and new. So, but I'd just rather it be Jan, because that way you kind of, like, don't have any doubt over the champ being the champ. Because if Reyes win, you know, people going, well, he didn't beat John Jones and all that good stuff. So I'd rather Blachowicz win. That way we don't have that argument. And I think Blachowicz is actually a guy that's being overlooked. And I think Reyes might come in kind of overconfident, because, you know, he's been talking like he's the champ since he lost to John Jones. So I think he might come in a little overconfident. He might take Jan a little lightly. So I'm going with Blachowicz to win this fight. But I'm with you. I think Cara France is probably going to come out of this fight card the big winner, because a lot of people don't know about him. I think he's going to probably be one of the guys in the running for performance of the night. He probably be in the running for a bonus in this fight, especially if he come out and do what he did in his last fight. This guy has a chance to be the real deal. I'm trying to see who he fought last time. He fought Nam last time, and he lost to Brandon Moreno. But I remember that fight being a good fight, though. The Brandon Moreno in his fight was actually
a good fight. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that was a great fight. That was the one that I was like,
yeah,
that made me a fan of him. And I was like, wow, like this guy lost, but he looked good losing.
Yep. So I'm with you that people watch his fight. Don't go to the bathroom. Don't go to the bar. Sit down and watch this young man fight. This is going to be a good fight. I know me and Keith probably, we just did predict the Adesanya Costa fight. But, you know, I'm looking forward to Saturday, man. I'll probably get out the house this weekend and actually go watch the fight somewhere. So, yeah, man, I'm looking forward to getting out the house and going to check the fight out.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. Me too. What was the last card? Was it Stipe and DC?
Yeah, that was the last pay-per-view.
Damn, that seemed like that was a while ago. Oh my god.
It was just last month.
It seemed like it was probably like 6 weeks ago though. It was a month.
It was early in the month.
Yeah, so that kind of seemed like it was
that was August, right? Yeah, that was August.
Yeah, that was August. I'm just saying it just feels like that was a while ago. But I'm definitely excited though. I'm gonna go out and watch it. I'll probably watch it over, you know, over my friends, you know. Probably watch it with a couple of my friends there, and probably order the pay per view or whatever. And
yeah, that was on DC and Stipe was August 15th.
Yeah, that seems like a while ago.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's because we're about to roll in October. October actually starts next week.
Yeah, so that kind of was a while ago. And then, yeah, there'll be, I think there's another one. I think there's another UFC card. It's only like, I think the next one is only like a couple weeks away.
Khabib
and Gaethje.
Yeah, that's Khabib and Gaethje. I think that's September. That's October. That's on towards the end of October.
Man, Khabib loves to fight in October, huh?
Man, it's so frustrating, bro. It's so frustrating that it only seems like he fights once a year. And that is so bad for the sport that your champion fights once a year. At the most, twice a year. That's just not a good look.
Yeah, I think even twice a year is good enough for me. You know what I mean? It's like, obviously, I'd love to see a champion that I like fight three times a year, but, like, realistically, when you break down the time, like, I don't mind, like, they're going to want to have some time, you know, with their family and stuff, too, and obviously they need to train, so it's, like, can't like, be crunching too much. If you want to have, like, longevity as a champion, you're probably not gonna fight three, four times a year, but, I mean, I think that's what happened to Max Holloway. I think Max Holloway, you know, he was fighting so many times, especially on that run he had. He got burnt out. This is a topic for another show because I'll go on about this. You know how I feel about this. Max Holloway, he fought way too many times. He had like four title fights in less than a year, and then the fourth title fight that he had in that like 1 year span was when he fought when he defended the belt against Volkanovski, and that's when he didn't even look like himself anymore. I'm telling you, that's why he dropped the belt, because he was burnt out. He fought too many times, you know. But like I said, that's one for another time.
Yeah, man. And actually, I think him going taking that Poirier fight, I kind of contribute his loss to Volkanovski to that too, because I think I understand what he was trying to do, but at the same time, it's like, if you wasn't going to stay at 155, then don't take that fight at 155, you know? So I think that man zapped a lot out on too. But, you know, man, it was good being back on the air, talking to my man Keys tonight, coming back at the people. Like I said, me and my man, we're going to get back in the lab. We're going to try to we're going to do better, people. We're going to do better. Summertime is just a time that, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, to get the schedules to match up and stuff like that. But me and Keys, we're going to get better, please believe. Tonight we talked about Michael Chandler signing to the UFC. We talked about, we recapped the Colby Covington versus Woodley fight. We talked about the main event and the co-main events for UFC 253 Saturday, gave our predictions. And we appreciate everybody listening to the show. Any last words for the people, please?
I got nothing. Just try to, you know, there's a lot of things I could say. You know what? Actually, you know one thing I'm going to say is,
go ahead.
Everybody be safe, because, you know, it's right now, I'm very disappointed, and I'm sure a lot of you are disappointed. You know, a lot of people out there are hurt, you know, that what they came out with in court, you know, with the Breonna Taylor case, you know, and they found that none of those officers really got, they basically all got off scot-free, and as if they didn't, you know, none of them were involved in a murder, and which I believe they were, and none of them are being held accountable for it. You know, they pretty much all got off free like nothing happened.
Yep.
And you know, somebody wrote on Twitter earlier today, and I couldn't believe my eyes, but I actually read it twice and was like, wait a second. They said that Michael Vick, like the dogs, Michael Vick's dogs got more justice than Breonna Taylor got.
Yep, I retweeted that, and you retweeted it.
And when I read that, well, obviously, you know what I mean, not his dogs, but that whole situation, the dog that he was, you know, that whole dog fighting thing that he was doing, they went harder for the dogs than they did for Breonna Taylor. And that's the thing. And that's just something to look at. It doesn't even need to be broken down. Just sit and think about that fact. And that's the thing. A lot of people are hurt right now, and I'm upset. You know, I'm upset, you know, for the family. And for everybody who, you know, related to the situation, and even if not related to the situation, because it doesn't really need to be, because the thing is this, is that what if it was your family, or what if it was you, or what if it was one of your kids, or what if it was one of your parents, how would you look at it then? That's the way that I look at it in all these situations. Same thing with the guy, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but the guy that the officer shot about a month or so ago, the guy that was breaching into his car and they shot him like 7 times. That guy, I said the same thing when I watched that footage. I felt the same way when I watched that footage, because a lot of people said, oh, well, he had, you know, you didn't know what his background, or he had all these, you know, criminal charges and this and that, and they had warrants for his arrest. And then I thought to myself, well, would you be want people to look into that man's background if that was your dad, or if that was your brother, or if it was you? Would you want people to be digging into, you know, all that and bringing that out when you just got brutally murdered by the police? Would you want people to be viewing you from that angle and saying, oh, it's justified that he would have, you know, that this would have happened because, you know, this is the history, or this is how, you know, he had warrants or and this and that. Would you want people to be viewing that way? And that's when it changes, because a lot of people would say no. Most people would say no. and they wouldn't want it to be looked at that way. But the thing is that everything is okay and everything is acceptable and everything is justified until it was happening to you, until it was in your neighborhood, or until it was your neighbor or your family or you or one of your friends. Everybody wants to turn the other cheek or you know, try to argue or say this is okay until it's you. And that's the thing. Everything is, you know, it's fine until it's me. You know, it's fine until it's me. And that's the issue. And I get frustrated even talking about it because a lot of people are hurt. And that's why I said be safe when I started out talking, because I know there's a lot of anger out there right now, and a lot of things that, you know, are probably going to pop up, a lot of situations going to pop up, and that's why I just say, you know, people be safe out there. I know a lot of people are hurt, but this too will pass and we'll get through it. But I know that I kind of stressed that out, but that's what I wanted to say.
That's all right, because I'm gonna just piggyback where you left. I'm gonna pick up where you left off. And I'm going to start with this. People, do not go out there hunting cops. Killing cops is not the answer to this problem. Do not be out there hunting the cops. Not all cops are bad cops. The thing is, we have a messed up justice system. Our legal system is broken. We have to fix our legal and our justice system. I was talking to a friend of mine, and he was like, he was just, when the Breonna thing came down, I could just tell by his voice that he was just so hurt. And he was talking about the justice system. I'm going to be short on this because I know we went over, but our legal system is twofold. Our legal system, if you have money, and people that don't have money. And I can testify to this because I got pulled over one night. I had a little bit too much. I got a DUI. I end up going to court. I got me a lawyer. The same night I got my DUI, another guy got his DUI. I got a lawyer because I could basically afford a lawyer. So I go through all these classes and do all this stuff. My case get pleaded down to reckless driving, 2 years probation, and I had, like, to pay a fine. This guy couldn't afford a lawyer. He got a public defender. He ended up serving, I want to say he did 90 days in jail. He ended up having to go through the same classes I went through, having to do all the stuff I went through, but he actually had to serve time because he couldn't afford a lawyer. So our legal system has to be fixed, bro. And people, do not take justice and the law into your own hands. Things seem to work themselves out. If you want to take things in your own hands, you do that by voting. I appreciate the passing of words from my man Keys. We're going through some trying times as a country. But like Key said, this too shall pass. There are going to be better days on the other side of this. So let's all stick together. Let's all be one race, and that's the human race. That being said, Lee and Key signing off. And like always, live, love, laugh. Live your life to the fullest. Tell somebody you love them. And have one good laugh every day. Lynn Key signing off. Peace.